leader!
Order, order.
Parliament's adjourned this week and next, and as usual during these breaks, none of the 18 select committees met to make some progress on their bills or their various inquiries. So, with time on our hands, we kept ourselves amused by developing a couple of new features. That sound of a tape rewinding for an instant replay of things said, and also this for guessing who said them.
The Week in Parliament Mystery Voice.
And it's an easy one to start.
The Week in Parliament Mystery Voice.
Next week, the House begins a two-week recess where members of the House will be able to spend more time in their electorates and on select committee business.
Whose is that mystery voice? Rhys Lyon has the answer.
As you probably guessed, that's the government's leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, who every Thursday makes a business statement indicating what'll be happening in the House the following week. This is what he had to say last Thursday.
Mr. Speaker, next week the House begins a two-week recess where members of the House will be able to spend more time in their electorates and on select committee business. When the House resumes on Tuesday, the 13th of October, the Government will progress a number of first readings on the order paper, including the Environment Canterbury Transitional Governments Arrangements Bill, the Taxation Transformation First Phase Simplification and Other Measures Bill, and the Health Home Carers Bill. Wednesday of that week, sir, will be a Members' Day.
That was Gerry Brownlee's business statement last Thursday before the House adjourned for 2 weeks. And this is what he had to say before the previous adjournment back in August.
Mr. Speaker, next week, while select committees will continue their business, the House will take a one-week recess.
But there were no committee meetings that week or this week, so I asked Labour's acting Shadow Leader of the House, Grant Robertson, about the lack of action in the committee rooms during adjournments.
The workload of select committees is very, very light at the moment. Legislation is very rarely introduced. Many committees are doing inquiries now, which is useful because that's a part of their job. But frankly, the government is just not generating the business that we would expect. The order paper is incredibly light, and that is definitely different from my experience both as an MP and as a staff member.
Grant Robertson also voiced concern about the government's recent moves to shorten the time that some bills are before committees.
I mean, the select committee process is a very important part of our legislative process. It's where, obviously, the deep analysis on legislation happens. It's where the public get their opportunity to have input. It's where officials are able to provide expert advice. Ideas are challenged, and many significant changes are often made. Whenever there's a truncated select committee process, all of those things get either eliminated or diminished. And particularly when we're looking at complex tax legislation, any truncation of the time means that there is a risk that we will have to be back amending legislation, that there will be unintended consequences. It's just not a good way to make law. It should only be used when it absolutely has to be. And we feel we're just seeing a bit much of it at the moment from the national government.
The acting Shadow Leader of the House said fast-tracking bills through select committees was sometimes acceptable, but should be rare.
There are times where there perhaps needs to be a quick change made to a piece of legislation where something's gone wrong, where there is a need because it will present a risk to the public or a risk to the finances of New Zealand that we move quickly. What it shouldn't be is when the government can't organise itself properly and then has to rush something through. And in the situation we've got at the moment with the Bright Line bill.
Yes.
The government actually made an announcement about this in May, yet here we are. The legislation's in fact already going to be retrospective anyway because they haven't met their 1st of October deadline, but they're trying to shove that through with a very truncated select committee process and a very large number of concerns being raised by members of the public and tax experts.
And as Grant Robertson mentioned there, one recent example of the truncating of the committee process was when the government moved to shorten consideration of a bill that aims to tax property speculators who profit when buying and selling houses within a two-year period, known as a Bright Line test. On that occasion, the government's committee fast-track motion was debated in the House under new provisions.
The rules were changed in Parliament to allow us to have a debate about the truncation of select committee processes. That came about at the same time as we moved from a default setting of 6 months for a piece of legislation to 4 months, you know, in order to allow the government to progress business more efficiently. If we go down to 4 months, then I think that makes the threshold even higher for going ahead with a truncated select committee process. Perhaps the business committee does need to go back, or even the standing orders committee, and have a think about what the rules are and how a truncated select committee process gets approved.
Mr. Robertson also outlined the concern his party had about government bills being debated under extended hours provisions, which are usually only used for treaty settlement bills and other non-controversial legislation. When the government most recently moved to use extended hours to progress a number of its bills, there was a rare vote on the move, which passed supported by National and its allies in the chamber, although there was opposition from several parties, including Labour.
Because it's actually a better alternative than putting Parliament into urgency, and generally speaking, what the government's done is use the extended hours process for non-controversial legislation, particularly for treaty settlement bills, which allows them to have the time for the iwi involved to also be included in proceedings. What happened most recently was that the government used the extended hours process for pieces of legislation that we in fact oppose. And we felt that in those circumstances we couldn't support that motion. That's the reality of the situation. We don't believe that that's a good way to use the extended hours process.
Mr. Robertson attributed some of the problems to a breakdown in communications.
I think where there has been a breakdown in the Leader of the House is that just the overall organisation of government business, you know, we appreciate it's a busy agenda that any government has to deal with, but not planning ahead and not giving themselves the time to pass legislation that matters to them isn't our fault. And we will, you know, we will challenge truncated select committee processes where there isn't a good reason, and it's simply a matter of the government's disorganisation that they've ended up in this position.
Labour's acting shadow leader of the House, Grant Robertson.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Among questions for ministers on the Thursday before the adjournment began was this one from the Greens List MP, Mojo Mathers.
Does the minister think it's acceptable that hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders who live with hearing loss are unable to access the TV commentary on the early Rugby World Cup game because we do not have mandatory captaining requirements in this country?
That question from Mojo Mathers was answered for the Broadcasting Minister Amy Adams by her Cabinet colleague Nikki Kaye.
Mr Speaker, I think we are doing a good job in terms of improving captioning in this country, but we can do better. I am advised that there are technical limitations that prevent captioning for the Rugby World Cup games. In terms of mandatory captioning requirements, in the past decade, we have seen a tripling of New Zealand's level of captioning for free-to-air television, and as such, we do not have plans to introduce mandatory requirements at this time.
Supplementary question, Mojo Mathers.
Does the minister accept that the fact that something of such significance as the Rugby World Cup is not being captained shows that the current model of relying on public funding rather than making captaining mandatory is not working?
The Honourable Nikki Kaye.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Broadcasting, I repeat what I said before, which is that we think overall we're moving in the right direction. We've seen a tripling of captioning content in the last 10 years. We've increased the budget from $2.4 million to $2.8 million. We know that we can improve. We're going to work with Sky TV and Prime to ensure they have the technical capability in the future, but we don't think mandatory is the way to go.
Supplementary question, Mojo Mathers.
Does the minister realise that the All Blacks game against Argentina was screened live with captions in Australia, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, France and other nations with mandatory captioning, but not in New Zealand, and does he consider that acceptable?
The Honourable Nikki Kaye.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Broadcasting, as I said before, you know, we are aware that other countries do have mandatory requirements here, but the point that I'd make to you is the the organisation that won the rights to broadcast do not have the technical capability. We're aware of that. We're working with Sky TV and Prime. We've increased the investment in this area, but it's not technically capable at the moment.
And it's the technical challenge of captioning live television that's facing Parliament as it continues to find a way of making its debates and proceedings accessible to all. There have already been two trials of live captioning, as the Clerk of the House, David Wilson, reported to the Government Administration Committee back in June.
We replicated the live setting that Question Time is carried out in. It's just that it wasn't broadcast because we wanted to be sure that it was actually of suitable quality. And it'd be fair to say they've found it really difficult compared to the things that they normally caption, which at least are partly scripted and are not always live. So they've found it difficult, particularly because of the quick interchange between members, member asking a question, perhaps the Speaker saying something, and then the member answering.
Clerk of the House David Wilson, whose previous role as an assistant clerk has been filled by Suze Jones. She's taken over the captioning project, which in the past couple of weeks passed a significant milestone by introducing captions for Question Times on the Video On Demand service via the internet. I asked her how it all worked.
As soon as the Handside's published to the website, which is around 2 hours, the text is formatted and then a caption file is created. That text is then synced with the video and it's published to YouTube, which viewers can access via the Parliament website. They click on In the House and it takes them to the captioned copy. Now, so Question Time goes up one question at a time so people can see it as quickly as possible. So the first captioned question goes up between 3:30 and 4 p.m. on a day when there is a question time, and the last one's up before 8 on that same sitting day.
Now you're looking at live captioning.
Mm.
That would be a different process.
It's quite a different process. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a provider in New Zealand at the moment that can provide the live captioning as quickly and to the quality that we need. So we've gone out to procure the captioning internationally and see what we can. There may be a New Zealand provider we don't know about. And hopefully they will then be able to provide straight onto Parliament TV the closed captions so that people at home while they're watching TV can actually see the captions and follow along with Question Time in real time and not wait for the on-demand service.
It would require a team of people. It would be quite a stressful thing to do, I would have thought.
And that's one of the reasons we're outsourcing. We have tried to do it internally ourselves with a team of people, but it's a very specialised skill. Our Hansard people aren't working in real time. They're not transcribing particularly, so they don't have exactly the same skills as the stenographers who do the captioning.
Given that there's not going to be easy to do, how valuable will it be? I mean, how many people actually watch Parliament TV?
Well, we know that about a third of New Zealanders at some time watch Parliament TV. And about 200,000 people use captions in New Zealand for other programs that do have them available. But we know that there must be a crossover. And so there are people who want to use captions and want to watch Parliament TV. So apparently the deaf and hard of hearing community is about 8.5% of the population. So that's a significant portion. And a growing number of people, so 1 in 3 people over 65, have some level of disability for hearing. So we think it's a growing group of people that we really want to have the same access to Parliament as everyone else.
Right, but there is a difference between someone who's hard of hearing and someone who needs captions to actually find out what's going on. It's between the people who are hearing impaired and the people who are profoundly deaf.
There is. But we are treating the caption as an accessibility for all kinds of people. So it's not necessarily, it might be people who just have to have the volume off on their TV in their office and want to follow along and not annoy everybody else.
With the captioning of Question Time, that's published at roughly the same time as the transcript of Question Time is published.
Absolutely, as close as possible that we can get, so that people won't have to go to the Hansard and not see the TV. They can choose which one they want to look at, essentially.
Yes. I would have thought that for many people, just looking at the text would be preferable to actually having to sit through the whole thing.
But I think you do miss some of the cut and thrust if you're not looking at the TV. But, I mean, again, it's a choice that people have.
Clerk Assistant Suze Jones. Back in the debating chamber the week before the adjournment began, as usual, at 2 on Tuesday, with questions for oral answer by ministers. although it turned out to be a question time with a difference, after the opposition parties got together to put seven virtually identical questions to the Prime Minister, starting with this one for Mr Key from opposition leader Andrew Little.
Does he stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister?
Mr Speaker, yes, I particularly stand by the statement I made when the member became the leader of the Labor Party when I said, gosh, if they keep changing Labor leaders at this rate, we'll have to ask them to start wearing...
Order. I can sense by looking at the questions this question time is going to be quite different to others. I will still do my best to maintain a level of decorum from all members, and if it requires me to ask members to leave the chamber, I will not hesitate to do so. Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. When he said we are on, quotes, the cusp of something special, end quotes, was that something special 50,000 more Kiwis unemployed today than when he came to office?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, the cusp of something special was, amongst other things, 199,000 jobs created since 2011, a lift in the average wage of more than $10,000 a year, Mr Speaker, a turning around of the government's books, the 11 straight quarters of growth and the 18 quarters of economic growth, Mr Speaker.
Questions from the Leader of the Opposition were followed by one from the Deputy Leader of the New Zealand First Party.
Question number two, Ron Mark.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by all his statements?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes, especially the statement when I said, I'm amazed New Zealand First didn't get the memo that Labor and the Greens got.
Mr Key's reference there was to Mr Mark's question being slightly shorter than the other six from the opposition, omitting the bit about Mr Key's 7 years as Prime Minister. But that didn't stop Mr Mark from asking his next, more specific question.
To the Prime Minister, does he stand by his statement that his government, quote, is delivering on its commitment to help all New Zealanders get ahead? If so, why?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes.
Supplementary question, Ron Mark.
To the Prime Minister, how is he helping New Zealanders get ahead when he's bringing in 60,000 new migrants a year at a rate of 1,200 a week, half of whom will settle in Auckland and all of whom will need a place to live?
Order. Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, well, firstly, there are a great many Kiwis returning home from overseas. But interestingly enough, we have free migration between New Zealand and Australia. The difference is, under a previous Labor government, 35,000 people a year left for Australia. Under a National government, in the last 5 months in a row, more Australians have come to New Zealand. I count that as success, Mr Speaker.
Then it was back to Andrew Little and some deja vu.
My question is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister?
Order. Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes, especially that one when I said, man, he really does sound like a broken record.
Supplementary. Okay. Order. Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
After 7 years, is he proud that, as the Prime Minister who called himself the son of a state house family, there are now nearly 2,500 fewer state houses for families who need them, and many of the ones that are left are mouldy, rotten and cold?
Mr Speaker,
the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
I'm very proud of the fact that we've been tidying up and fixing up the state housing mess that was left by Labor, and I'm very proud of the fact we're the first government in 43 years to have raised benefits, Mr Speaker.
The opposition memo with the full wording of the day's question for the Prime Minister had obviously reached Greens co-leader James Shaw.
Does he stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister?
What a Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, yes. Especially the statement I made, which was at least he read it out better than Andrew Little.
Order.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
Does he still stand by his statement that, quote, only the odd one or two kids turn up to school without lunch, given that a Principals Federation survey found that 73% of low decile schools use their core educational funding to feed their students every day?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I stand by the full quote that was made at the time and the context it was given, but I would make the point, this is a government that's delivered over 5 million breakfasts since it's been in office.
That's right. Supplementary.
Order. Order. Supplementary. Order. The level of interjection and noise is too high. Supplementary question, James Shaw. Order.
So is he saying that breakfast is enough for kids and that they don't need lunch also?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, well, for a start, Mr Speaker, this is the government that's worked hard to create more jobs and has more Kiwis in history than ever before. This is a government that's actually raised benefits for the first time in 43 years. This is a government that's ensured that now children under 13 can go to the doctor for free. This is a government that's seen hundreds of thousands of safe houses houses.
Order. I have a point of order from James Shaw.
Yeah, thank you, Mr Speaker. My question was in relation to students eating breakfast and lunch, not in relation to unemployment benefits.
Order. No, but the question may have been in relation to that, but it wasn't. It was, is the Prime Minister effectively saying breakfast is enough and they don't need lunch and dinner? That is the sort of question that gives a fairly wide ambit in the answer.
Then it was back to Labour's front bench, where their deputy leader, Annette King, was waiting to be the third opposition MP to put this question to the Prime Minister.
Does he stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes. Yes, especially the statement I made that if I was Annette King, I'd be ashamed of the fact that I didn't fund a septum when I was Minister of Health.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker. I wasn't the Minister then, Prime Minister. I wasn't the Minister. I wasn't the Prime
Order.
I wasn't the Minister.
Order. Well, I hope it is a point of order. Point of order, the Right Honourable.
I seek leave to table when Annette King was Minister of Health from 2000-2005.
Order. I don't think that information... Order. That information's available to members if they so wanted.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question.
Order.
Why does he stand by all his statements on health when Ian Sutherland, a heart patient with chest pains, was discharged from hospital in his pyjamas, was told to catch a bus to Palmerston North, and if he wanted to replace his pyjamas, he should go to the op shop.
Mr Speaker, because under a National-led government, we are now doing 50,000 more elective surgical operations than 2008. Because under a National-led government, we've increased the number of first specialist appointments up from 430,000 to 542. Because under a National-led government, there are 5,500 more doctors and nurses in our DHBs. And under a National-led government, children under 13 can go to the doctor for free. That's why I stand behind Jonathan Coleman and National Under Health.
Well, let's have another one then. Well, in light of that answer...
I haven't called the member yet.
Oh, sorry, Mr Speaker.
Supplementary question, the Honourable Annie.
In light of that answer, why should he stand by all his statements on health, including the one he's just given us, when Ken Smith, like thousands of others, can't get surgery for his bone-on-bone knee condition, but his surgeon said, quote, if I could do your knee tomorrow, I would. There is just no money, end of quote.
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I think it's a bit rich coming from Annette King, because when she was Minister of Health, the number of first specialist assessments went down. When Annette King was Minister of Health, people used to go to Australia to get treatment, Mr Speaker. And I remember when they used to be held out in bays outside of hospitals. Mr Speaker, the reason she was no longer Minister of Health was because Helen Clark dumped her. That's right.
Order.
Supplementary question,
supplementary
Mr Speaker.
Supplementary Order.
Put some
Order.
Gin in it.
Order.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker.
Order. I just require less interjection from the Honourable Annette King.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Did he know that Bill English has said health needs $600 to $700 million a year to meet demand? So why did the health budget receive half that amount increase this year, resulting in children waiting for months on end with rotten and abscessed teeth because there's not enough funding?
The Honourable, right
Mr.
Honourable
Speaker,
Prime
for
Minister.
A start, just to get the facts on the table around health spending, it was $11.8 billion in 2008-09 under a Labor government. It's $15.9 billion, say up 33%. But, Mr. Speaker, just to prove that spending money doesn't necessarily fix your problems, between 2000 and 2008, 761 cancer patients were flown to Australia, and I quote the Dominion Post when it said about the Labor government then, it is inconceivable the government could spend so much money but make the system worse. That is the words of the Dominion Post.
Supplementary question, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary question, the Honourable Annette King.
Is he aware the Ministry of Health warned the Minister that after $1.7 billion in spending cuts since 2010, quote, easy wins are exhausted and major cuts are needed, end quote, which has led to thousands of New Zealanders being turned away from even seeing a specialist?
For the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Let us go through a simple maths examination. $11.8 billion was the starting point of health spending. If we take off the 1.7 of cuts that Annette King's told the country, we'd be at 10.1, and the answer is we're actually spending $15.9 billion. I rest my case.
You can't even do your maths.
Order.
Supplementary question. Supplementary question.
Oh, it was actually quite a strong subject of mine, but be that as it may,
the
Honourable Annette King.
Are Grey Power out of touch, or as he likes to say, just Rent-A-Crowd, when they protest at the current state of health care of older New Zealanders, which see frail old New Zealanders dumped off surgery lists and their home care cut by half?
That's right.
Speaker, except I haven't seen the President of Grey Power for a wee while because he hasn't made an appointment to come and see me. But the last time he came to see me, Mr. Speaker, he came to my office and said, let's have a cup of tea. Things are going so well, I've got nothing to talk about.
The Greens also had another go, the question this time coming from their Foreign Affairs spokesman, Kennedy Graham.
He stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
See, yes, especially the one I just made, which was it's nice to hear the question read out in a baritone.
Order.
Supplementary, sorry.
Supplementary question, Dr. Kennedy Graham.
Supplementary, sir.
Supplementary question, Dr. Kennedy Graham.
Does the Prime Minister stand by his statement that, quote, we're seen as a country that is doing its fair share on climate change when our net emissions have risen by 13% since he took office?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, and we disagree with the fact that the member tried to present the House as it's incorrect.
And finally, there was this one about the flag from Labor's Jacinda Ardern.
My question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by all his statements after almost 7 years as Prime Minister?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, especially the statement I made that when Jacinda Ardern becomes the leader, the cool thing is that we'll have faced more Labor leaders than Australian Prime Ministers.
Supplementary question, Jacinda Ardern.
Supplementary to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by his statement that, quote, a small majority of New Zealanders will say that they will change the flag, end quote, when the latest poll shows that after seeing his options, almost 70% have rejected change?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes. And what's rapidly emerging after 7 years of being Prime Minister is not only do I have to run the policies that the government has, I now have to try and implement the policies that the opposition have as well.
Supplementary.
Order.
Supplementary.
Order. Order. Supplementary question, Jacinda Ardern.
Supplementary, is his claim that the polls aren't granular enough the reason he has started his own poll by asking every audience at every speech he gives if they want the flag to change, including at a cancer fundraiser? If so, is this granular, scientific, or most importantly, is it appropriate?
Right Honourable Prime Minister. Order, the answer wasn't heard because the Prime Minister...
Mr Speaker, all of the above.
The Prime Minister, John Key. More details on our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz. I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.